Welcome to Witness from the BBC World Service, where history is told by those who were there. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello and welcome to the Witness History podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Alex Last. And with the world concerned about fake news, today we have a tale about wartime deception, jazz music and sex. Well, fictional sex. It's the story of how Britain set up fake German radio stations during the Second World War to undermine the Nazi war machine. If you'd listened to the radio during the Second World War, you might just have come across the sultry voice of Vicky.
Hier ist Vicky mit den drei Küssen. Ich bringe Ihnen Musik.
Vicky was a German radio star who introduced a music request program on a German radio station broadcasting to the German armed forces. The thing is, this was no normal radio station, and Vicky was no normal radio star. The radio station was actually fake, set up in Britain by the British. And as for Vicky, well, she was in fact the actress and singer Agnes Burnell, then a young German refugee to Britain, whose Jewish father had once owned a cabaret club in Berlin before he'd had to flee the Nazis. In the 1970s, she told her story to the BBC.
C'est une chanson qui nous ressemble.
I was Vicky, the German forces sweetheart, the girl with the three kisses. In reality, it was a brilliant hoax, black propaganda. Deceived by the standard German war slogans, my millions of German listeners believed they were listening to a genuine German radio station and swallowed our sly propaganda.
All this was the creation of a top-secret department, the Political Warfare Executive. It was set up at a time when Nazi Germany had conquered much of Europe. Its covert mission was to coordinate British propaganda aimed at undermining the German war effort and stoking resistance to the Nazis. Professor Joe Fox of the Institute of Historical Research is an expert on wartime propaganda.
The Political Warfare Executive was formed in 1941, and that department was responsible for subversive propaganda activities, which included leaflet drops, it included agents on the ground, it included fabricating and spreading rumours across Europe. And it's the most extraordinary constellation of people. It's historians, it's journalists, it's performers, it's cabaret artists. It's people like Graham Greene, Muriel Spark. Ian Fleming is involved in Political Warfare Executive, the author of James Bond. And there are a lot of exiles for obvious reasons.
In essence, the department's job was to wage psychological warfare, and that included the use of so-called black propaganda, the shadow world, where one could play dirty in the propaganda war, and all sides did.
Black propaganda, you do not know who the source is, you don't know where it's coming from. It is usually intended deliberately to disguise its identity. And there the gloves were off. And it was out of that that these clandestine radio stations were born, 40 of them, all designed to destabilise the Nazi war effort. And radio was hugely important during the Second World War because for the first time, enemy propagandists can speak directly to your population over the airwaves.
Perhaps the most famous example of British black propaganda were the radio stations set up by Dennis Sefton Delmer. Sefton Delmer had grown up in Germany and in the 1930s had worked as the Berlin correspondent for the Daily Express newspaper. He knew the Nazi leadership personally, and he put that knowledge to use.
It was precisely my acquaintance with the inside life of the Hitler regime that enabled me to do subversive propaganda with greater effect than had I not known. I was asked to start what was called a freedom station, a black radio, pretending that they were speaking from inside Europe, inside Hitler-occupied Europe.
Sefton Delmer's first radio project was called GS1, Gustav Siegfried Eins. The main speaker, if you happen to tune in, was a man simply known as the Chief, a top pro-Hitler Prussian army officer. But it did not sound like a normal radio station. It was far more cunning. It was designed to sound like the listener had stumbled across a frequency carrying secret radio traffic between a network of top German officers.
It invests the listener with a sense of importance, of being in the know, of tuning in, of listening in to information that they're not supposed to hear.
In fact, it pretended to be some officers of a secret society, the German Officers League, talking to each other. We never said that this was the case. Mm-hmm. We merely allowed the listener to infer it. And they never talked against Hitler. The Führer was still what they believed in, but they deplored the bad people surrounding the Führer.
That narrative is but the setting for a whole series of much more pointed interventions, meaning that Dahlmer could weave into that rumours, speculations, designed to disturb and disrupt.
To generate credible material, Sefton Dahlmer and his team used their own experiences of Germany and worked closely with British intelligence, even using details from bugged conversations between captured prisoners of war.
New details, new colour, would make our stories plausible, would help us in our conclusions from the German output and the things that we learned from refugees or travellers or prisoners of war. Their conversations in the cages were mic'd, and we got an enormous lot of valuable intelligence from them.
But perhaps most controversially, Sefton Dahlmer decided to use pornography to attract listeners to GS1. They had the fictional chief broadcast a lot of detailed, sexually explicit gossip, something unheard of in the 1940s, and not everyone was happy with this. A British government minister, for one, was outraged when he happened to hear about one of these fake German broadcasts, which involved a particularly graphic story about a German admiral, an orgy, and a helmet.
This is thought to be distinctly un-British. There are those in government who think, and in the propaganda ministry in Britain, do not like certain elements of Dahlmer's behaviour. The pornographic element, the lurid stories, the explicit nature of some of his broadcasts, the coarse language that Dahlmer's using is just thought to be underhand, clandestine, disgusting behaviour of which the British want none of this.
What we tried to do was simply to attract the kind of people who eavesdrop, expecting to hear a few vulgar expressions, and by Jove, we gave them plenty of vulgar expressions.
Some in government may have been unhappy, but soon it became clear that people were listening to GS1 in Germany, even if that came with some unintended consequences.
For instance, the American military attaché in Berlin, he fell for it and he was putting it through in dispatches to Roosevelt, which eventually came to us. And I just thought that they were being charming and providing evidence of reception and that we were indeed being heard. And then gradually the penny dropped with the chaps in charge and it was decided that we could not allow Roosevelt, at any rate, to go on thinking that this stuff was genuine because in that case, danger that he might think the Germans were going to collapse from internal discord, which would have been too bad because we wanted to get America into the war.
GS1 was just one of many radio projects. Some were aimed at the religious, some targeted workers, some were short-lived, some lasted longer. Among the longest-running were the Soldatensender stations, where Vicky was the star, which pretended to be broadcast from within occupied Europe and were aimed at the German armed forces and U-boat crews.
Here is the Soldatensender West of 251, 304, 410 and 492 meters.
We were a small group, three girl singers, a pianist, and a sound effects expert from Hollywood. We gave them jazz, forbidden in Germany for its decadence, talks, and genuine news. Nazis scoured Germany to track down the station. There were rumours it came from a barge on the Rhine, a cellar in Dortmund, a moving truck. Actually, we broadcast from a thatched cottage in Buckinghamshire, and later from Woburn Abbey. My own record request programmes were aimed at genuine people whose addresses we took from the letters of captured German soldiers. It comes to you, Werner, from your girlfriend Hilde in Mainz, and is sung to you by your very own Vicky.
Moi qui t'aimais, toi qui m'aimais, mais la vie sépare.
Once you've established this relationship, you can just drop in nuggets of information that make you stop and question. These can be real, these can be fabricated, it doesn't matter. All the time it's intended to disrupt.
Once I broadcast the names of some party officials' wives who had bought up a lot of woolen goods in their local shops. If everyone behaved like this, I thundered, there would be nothing left for anyone else. A week later, the German papers reported a run on winter clothes which quite embarrassed the German economy. Another time I announced that Allied saboteurs in SS uniform were dropped in a certain vicinity. As a result, all the SS-men in the district set about arresting each other. Also, I gave a message to say that the Ministry of Health in Berlin was asking every good patriotic German to put a sample of urine into a little bottle and post it to the ministry in Berlin. We clogged up the postal service for weeks.
I'm wild again, beguiled again.
In one of my broadcasts, I sympathised with the captain of a certain U-boat for not having been home on leave for more than 2 years. Then I played for him the German version of Yes, Sir, That's My Baby and congratulated him on the birth of a son.
Knowing, of course, that U-boat hadn't been back for 2 years, this could only then have occurred by infidelity. I mean, that really is going to mess with your mind.
It was too much for the captain. He had lain submerged off the coast of Scotland undetected, but now he surfaced and surrendered. He ended his war in a prison camp.
Despite these stories, it's impossible to know the broader impact of all this psychological warfare, which of course is aimed at undermining those who are wavering, not the committed.
And in many ways, that's the nature of black propaganda. It's like firing 1,000 bullets in the hope that one will hit.
At the end of the war, these radio stations were shut down. But, says Professor Joe Fox, the work of the British propagandists is still remarkably relevant today.
We are caught in a panic, I think, about disinformation. And we feel that this is the first time that this has ever happened to us. It is most certainly not a new phenomenon. Black propagandists now use all of the same techniques, disguising the source, pretending to be something it's not, getting out misinformation, disinformation. The difference now is scale, scope and speed and who. But the nature of that propaganda is absolutely the same.
Les pas des amants désunis. Professor
Joe Fox, ending this edition of the Witness History Podcast with me, Alex Last. We have hundreds more episodes for you to listen to on all sorts of subjects, so do have a browse in our archive. And we have specially curated collections on our website, including one all about the Second World War. Just search online for BBC Witness History. That's all from me for now, so until the next time, thanks for listening. Goodbye.